First thing that I want to mention that I believe will help yield a happy marriage is to have a sincere desire to be happy in marriage. That may be a funny way to start. You might think, why would you even mention that? Of course, we want to be happy in marriage. But from the way some act, I'm not so sure they want to be happy in marriage or be happy anywhere. You've heard of the people who were born in the objective case and in the kickety mood. They never seem to receive any happiness anywhere. I'm reminded of an old story of a commuter on a train going home for the evening. And he said to a fellow traveler that if I get home and my wife doesn't have supper ready, I am literally going to raise the roof. And then he said, if she does have it ready, I'm not going to eat a bite of it. Well, that's the way some people conduct themselves. Nothing is going to please them. But I believe it's God's will for us to be happy. Genesis 2:18 says, and Jehovah God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him. It was not good for man to be alone, so he made someone for him that would be good. Now, I don't think that he was saying he was going to make someone so it would be good for him to be miserable. He was going to give him someone that would make it good for him so he could be happy. I believe it was God's intent from the very beginning to establish a relationship between man and woman that would be a happy relationship. The Old Testament points out the importance of beginning a marriage in happiness. In Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, when a man taketh a new wife, he shall not go out in the host, neither shall he be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year, and shall cheer his wife whom he hath taken. The word cheer means to make glad, to make joyful, to cause to rejoice. And just to make a play on words, you're to cheer your wife, not tear her, not make her cry. Proverbs 5:18 says, let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of thy youth. While the primary import emphasizes faithfulness to your wife, it still does say, rejoice in the wife of thy youth. Ecclesiastes 9:9, a similar verse, live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of thy life. God wants us to be happy. He tells us to rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. He wants us to be happy in marriage. We're going to have to work at it. We have to have the sincere desire to be happy and then invest in that marriage to contribute to the happiness of that relationship. Secondly, I believe that you should show your love. Now, love is commanded. Matthew 22nd chapter, verse 39, love your neighbor as yourself. That's a broad term, but it includes everyone. It would include the man's wife, the man's love for his wife, the wife's love for her husband. Three times in Ephesians, the fifth chapter, the man is told to love his wife. I don't know why the emphasis is upon the man, and I don't know why the emphasis is upon the word that is used here. But in verse 25, it says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. Then in verse 28, it says, even so ought husbands also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his own wife loveth himself. Then again in verse 33, nevertheless do ye also severally love each one his own wife, even as himself. So three times in just a space of few verses, the husband is told to love his wife. Then in Titus 2 verse 4, the women are told to train the young women to love their husbands. Now the love that husbands are commanded to have is not a love of some sentimental emotion. It is an act of the will. The most frequent use, the most word that is most frequently used in the New Testament for love is agape. And it's not something you fall into, but something you develop. It's an act of the will. This kind of love is seeking the good or seeking the welfare of another. This is a word that is used in Matthew 5:44 when we're told to love our enemies. Now, you can't always have some kind of emotional attachment with your enemy. You might not even like your enemy, but you can still seek his welfare. You can still do him good. I've always liked William Barclay's definition of the word. He says it means unconquerable benevolence, invincible goodwill. This is the ability to love those who are unlovable, to do good to those who would do harm to us. Now, if we're to do good to all people and seek the welfare of all, even the enemies, then certainly how much more should we always seek the welfare of our own companion? And the husbands are told to love their wives. Romans 13:10 says, love worketh no ill to his neighbor. And love worketh no ill to a man's wife. He is to love her and care for her and treat her in the right way. How could any man who loves his wife ever abuse her, ever strike her, ever do anything to harm her or to injure her? He is to love his wife. But love is more than that. It also involves that natural attachment of two people who are drawn together. The women are told in Titus 2:4, as we said, to train the young women to love their husbands. But the word here is from phileo, which according to Strong's Concordance means to have affection for, denoting personal attachment as a matter of sentiment or feeling. So this love involves the heart, whereas the other love involves the head. And Barclay again says it is a word of warm, tender affection, the highest kind of love. And wives are to express this kind of love to their husbands. Now most of us, and it should be all of us, want to love and want to be loved by someone. Husbands want to be loved. Wives want to be loved. That's the reason we get married. Because we want to love and we want to be loved. That's the reason it's commanded to love, so that we can be happy. And so we can respond in the way that God wants us to respond. But this love needs to be demonstrated in some way. It needs to be shown. And one way is simply by words, saying that I love you. Marriage counselors all agree that we need to tell our mates that we love them. Now, sometimes a man will just shrug that off and use the joke, you know, I told you once I loved you. If I ever change my mind, I'll let you know. That doesn't really work. This is not only good for you, it's also not only good for your wife, but it's good for you as well. Zig Ziglar said that a study showed that men who said, I love you, to their wives every morning lived 5 years longer than those who didn't. So if you want to add 5 years to your life, every morning tell your wife that you love her. Now, it's not because you just say that. It's because of the relationship that they had, which caused them to express that love. Now then, let me ask, how long has it been since some of you told your companion, I love you? A number of years ago, I was preaching along this line in a meeting in Missouri. It was at a morning service, and that night, a woman, maybe in her 70s or 80s, she and her husband had been there at the morning service, and she came up with a big smile on her face and a twinkle in her eye, just beaming with radiance, and said, he told me he loved me. Now, I gathered that he hadn't told her that very often, but he did that day, and it meant so much to her. Made me feel glad that he did, but it made me feel sad to know that a husband and wife could live together for a long time without expressing their love for each other. Husbands, you're usually the ones that at fault, so make sure before the day is over you tell your wife you love her. You wives will probably do it anyway, but go ahead. And it doesn't hurt to do it several times a day. I practiced today just to be sure I was all right. But more than that, it needs to be shown in other ways. You know, love is not just saying. 1 John 3:18, my little children, let us not love in word, neither with a tongue, but in deed and truth. And of course, that means let us not love only in word and only with a tongue, but in deed and in truth. Now, you can tell her you love her, but the way that you really show that you love her is by the way you treat her. Treat her with gentleness, kindness, compassion. Be helpful to her. Follow the traits set forth in 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. If you desire to be happy, and if you'll show your love, it will contribute to a happy marriage. Now, third thing is express your approval. One of the basic needs of mankind is to feel accepted, to feel appreciated, to feel that he is approved or she is approved of. And the more we love someone, the more we seek that approval. And if we don't give that approval, we're going to have a disappointed companion. There was a small woman once who complained about the treatment she received from her husband. He was a rather large man, but she quickly explained, "Oh, he never hit me. But sometimes I wished that he had hit me rather than everlastingly clubbing me with his disapproval. He always disapproved of something I said or did." Now, Jesus expressed his approval of people. Sometimes it was maybe about someone, but I'm sure the message was given to that person. In Mark 14:6, he commended a woman and told them to let her alone who were criticizing her because she had wrought a good work. He said in Matthew 8:10 that the centurion had great faith. Paul commended Phoebe in Romans 16th chapter, said she had been a helper of many and of mine own self. And he just goes down the list in that 16th chapter, verses 3 and 4, Priscilla and Aquila. Verse 6, Mary. In verse 12, salute Tryphena and Tryphosa, who labor in the Lord. Salute Persis. And so Paul was one who would commend and approve. And then the Apostle John in 3 John 5 said, Gaius, beloved, thou doest a faithful work in whatsoever thou doest toward them that are brethren and strangers withal. We need to express our approval. And we don't always have to be criticizing and pointing out things that are wrong. There was a man who observed his golden wedding anniversary. Someone asked him the secret of staying together for 50 years. And he said, well, when he got married, her father gave him a watch, and there was an inscription across the face of the watch. And every time he looked at his watch, he saw that inscription. It said, "Say something nice to Sally." And he had practiced that. For 50 years, he had been expressing his approval and saying something nice to Sally. I read something recently that really struck a nerve with me. It really had to do with parents and children. But I think the principle applies, and I want to share it with you. And you children will, you youngsters, you'll probably appreciate this. And it's in the area of expressing approval without the negative. Now, I'm not one of those who say you shouldn't have the negative, because I've just got through preaching on the Ten Commandments, which mostly are negative. But there are times when you should avoid the negative, and I think this will be self-explanatory. I've got two A's, the small boy cried. His voice was filled with glee. His father very bluntly asked, "Why didn't you get three?" "Mom, I've got the dishes done," the girl called from the door. Her mother very calmly said, "Did you sweep the floor?" "I mowed the grass," the tall boy said, "and put the mower away." His father asked him with a shrug, "Did you clean off the clay?" The children in the home next door seem happy and content. The same things happen over there, but this is how it went. "I got two A's," the small boy cried. His voice was filled with glee. His father very proudly said, "That's great. I'm glad you belong to me." "Mom, I've got the dishes done," the girl called from the door. Her mother smiled and softly said, "Each day I love you more." "I mowed the grass," the tall boy said, "and put the mower away." His father answered with much joy, "You've made my happy day." Children deserve a little praise for the task they're asked to do. If they're to lead a happy life, so much depends on you. But what about the husband and wife relationship? That's a fine meal you cooked tonight. Of course, you had a little bit too much salt in the beans. Or you did a fine job with my shirts, but next time don't put so much starch in it, please. Or maybe the wife says, "Well, I see you got the yard mowed today. See, you missed a spot over there." You know, on and on that we go. Why don't we sometimes show our approval without throwing in the negative? Some years ago, Anne Murray made popular a song that many of you have heard many times. And I don't know exactly the situation the song is describing. I just like some of the words that were expressed of how she was helped. This girl who was singing, that was singing about, was helped by a man who gave her approval. "It's You Needed Me. I cried a tear, you wiped it dry. I was confused, you cleared my mind. I sold my soul, you bought it back for me, and helped me up and gave me dignity. Somehow, you needed me. You gave me strength to stand alone again, to face the world out on my own again. You put me high on a pedestal, so high that I can almost see eternity. You needed me, you needed me. And I can't believe it's you, I can't believe it's true. I needed you and you were there and I'll never leave. Why should I leave? I'd be a fool. 'Cause I finally found someone who really cares." You put your companion up on that pedestal. Show them that you love them and appreciate them and approve of the work that they do. They're not going to leave. Wives should praise her husbands. If the love of the husband for the wives mean they're to cherish and honor and respect them, this would also be true of the wife toward the husband. She's to respect him, for he is the provider of the home. He's the protector of the home. He's the leader of the home. And if you live in the way that you should, then some of those scriptures that Brother Collies quoted last night will not have to apply to you, about it being better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a contentious woman, or better to dwell in a desert land, or to dwell with a woman who maketh you ashamed. The woman is to develop the precious spirit of an incorruptible apparel of a meek and quiet spirit. If you want to really be happy, if you'll show your love, if you'll express your approval, this will contribute to a happy marriage. Then there is a fourth suggestion. Be willing to talk things over. We know in Matthew the 5th chapter that if we have offended someone, we're to go to them and make it right. We know in Matthew the 18th chapter that if someone has offended us, we're to go and talk to them and try to make it right. But now, doesn't that apply to husbands and wives? You don't even have to go. You don't even have to leave the house. She's there. He's there. You can talk this over. And surely it doesn't say straighten things out with everyone except your husband or your wife. An article in Ann Landers said once, the most important single ingredient in a marriage is the ability to communicate. It means to talk to each other, to tell each other of your likes and dislikes, the things you want to do and don't want to do, what pleases you and what displeases you. And then when you have a problem, be able to talk about it reasonably. That's the reason that sometimes people blurt out in public something about their husband or their wife. It's because they can't or won't talk about it in private. We need to be able to be entreated. James 3:17 gives a mark of wisdom as easy to be entreated. That means easy to be persuaded. That means you can talk to that person and that person will listen. This is what we should do in order to have a happy marriage. I know one man, read of one man, that said he'd learned how to deal with his wife. She was a better talker than he was, and he said he just learned to be silent. And sometimes he'd go 3 or 4 days without speaking. The preacher told him, that's going to be real expensive on you. And later on he learned, because in a matter of weeks he had heard that the man had bleeding ulcers. If you want a bleeding ulcer, just cultivate that practice of going 3 or 4 days at a time without speaking. There are certain things that will help us communicate with each other. One is to pray for wisdom as to how to do it, James 1:5. Another is to plan the right time. Ecclesiastes 3:7 says there's a time to speak and a time to be silent. I know a woman who said that she'd learned she could always talk with her husband better after he'd eaten a good meal. That was very valuable advice for me, because he was one of my elders, and I never tried to bring up a controversial issue when I knew he was hungry. So I followed her advice and got along with him pretty well. We need to speak the truth in love, and the more truth you speak, the more love you need to show, Ephesians 4:15. We need to speak with kindness. A boy married a girl with a high temper, and the father gave him a bucket. Said, when she throws fire, you throw water. Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but a grievous word stirreth up anger. Listen to the other side. This is a complaint that wives often make of husbands. They don't listen. And then talk about the real problem. Just a week or so ago, there was in the paper, our daily paper, Corpus Christi Caller Times, about a couple who was having a problem, and the woman was really lashing out against her husband. He had put some onions in the refrigerator without wrapping them up. Now, he had done this before, so he didn't know what the big deal was. As they discussed it more, he found out that he always liked to sleep at night without any covers on, and she always liked it to be warm. And for 17 years, she had been freezing to death, and now then she was complaining to him about these onions that were put in the refrigerator. It wasn't the onions, it was the freezing for 17 years that she was mad about. And too many times, we'll talk about one thing, and we'll actually be concerned about something else. I want to give you 4 words to remember that might help you. This is the little story that I heard on the radio some time ago. apparently was a real case. A man and woman came into a preacher's office to be counseled. They were having problems. She began to lash out at him, and he began to lash out at her, and their voices got louder and louder and louder, and finally the preacher saw this wasn't going to work. So he said, "Just stop. Just wait a minute." He told the man to come outside, and so they went outside. Now he said, "We're not getting anywhere. And if we're going to accomplish anything, and if you want me to continue with this counseling business, you've got to agree to do what I say." And the man agreed. He said, "When we go back in there, I don't want you to say one word. Not one word. But when it comes time, I'll nod my head. And when I nod my head, I want you to say four words. You may be right. You understand?" And he said he understood. And they went in, and the woman started giving her complaints, and she got louder and louder. And the preacher nodded his head, and the man meekly said, "You may be right." She was sort of stunned for a while and hesitated, but she resumed. The preacher nodded his head, and he said, "You may be right." And this happened several times, and finally she just stopped and said, "We've been married all of these years, and that's the first time that you've ever even hinted that I might be right about anything." And she settled down, and they began to talk, and they worked out their problem. You might try that in a church meeting, Jerry, sometime, business meeting. You may be right. Another thing, I keep waiting for Jerry to come up here. I don't know when it's coming. Try to understand each other. Maybe, he's coming now. I was trying to get him up here before I came to this one. And that's to try to understand each other. 1 Peter 3:7, it says that we're to dwell with our wives according to knowledge, and some versions render that to be considerate. But if you're going to be considerate, you've got to have some knowledge about your wife. We often say that the Lord doesn't command us to do anything we can't do, but understanding your wife, now that might be one of those that's real difficult. Someone said, "Watch out about the fellow who says he understands women. He'll lie about other things too." Now there's some obvious differences, physical differences between men and women, and there are certain little things that go on in life, like the use of the TV. All men, don't they like the click during every commercial? I see some nodding. A woman doesn't like that too much. When a man comes in from work, she may ask him, "How did things go?" And he'll say, "Fine." That's about the end of the discussion. But if she comes in from work and he asks her, she wants his undivided attention, and she wants to tell in detail. And if he's watching TV, she doesn't want him cutting his eyes over at the TV. And as one lady said very emphatically in a class we were discussing this, she said, "Putting it on mute doesn't count." Women often talk in code. A man will come in and say, "Let's go to the ball game tonight." A woman might approach it like, "Anything good on the movies tonight? Have you looked in the paper?" What she's saying is she wants to go to a movie. One gentleman in our class one night said, "A woman will talk in code, and you had better learn that code." I just want to mention that we need a sense of humor. We need to have some fun. We need to laugh at each other, laugh with each other, laugh at ourselves. If we're going to be happy, we're going to have to laugh. And so let's cultivate a sense of humor. And then finally, we're going to make mistakes. The Lord forgives us. Let's forgive one another. Let's forgive and let's forget. Hopefully some of these things will help us to have a happy marriage. Thank you.